is United States v. Scharf. Schaff? Mr. Senf?
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, my name is Tim Senf, and I represent Shane Schaff in this appeal. First thing I want to, I'm basically going to hit on two major points of this decision. First of all, Mr. Schaff was involved in a very significant snowmobile accident and was injured in 05. The snowmobile accident, they were traveling 40 miles an hour, went off the sled, and another snowmobile landed on top of him. He had a compression fracture in his mid-back. He had a knee injury. Despite having a helmet on, he had a brain injury. And he also had a brachial plexus injury. And this is a very serious injury. It actually avulsed the nerve through the neuroforamen in his neck at C5-6. And after many tests, it was determined that they'd have to do a nerve transplant. In other words, you take nerves from the lower arm and hook the nerve that supplies the shoulder and the lower arm onto a different level in the cervical spine. And very significant surgery. It was necessary to do that so as to avoid paralysis of the shoulder and potential amputation of the arm if it atrophied and lost function.
He can move his arm, can't he?
Yes, he can, Your Honor.
Does he drive with just one arm, or does he use his other arm?
My understanding is he drives with one arm, Your Honor. There's different testimony in the record in that regard. One of the DDS...
Does he have one of these, you know, disabled person licenses?
Not aware of that, Your Honor. But at any rate, the significance of that is because there's a lot of discussion in this case about credibility of Mr. Schaff, but this is a very, very objective injury. It's not highly subjective at all. Now the other main crux of this whole case comes about on the judge's, the ALJ's decision at page 7. In essence, what the judge appears to do is to cherry-pick the evidence here. There's two DDS doctors. One says he shouldn't use his arm at all. He doesn't find that doctor credible. There's another DDS doctor that says he can use it to some degree. He does find that doctor credible. The treating doctor, Dr. Ingalls, who has treated him for many years, prescribing him medication to the tune of between 60 and 120 oxycodone every 4 to 6 weeks, he opines in a RFC that Mr. Schaff is very limited with his left arm. He's very takes a lot of detail in regard to the RFC, talks about the left arm when he talks about the lifting that he can do, also in regard to the restrictions about heights and that sort of thing. And he also opines that Mr. Schaff will miss approximately 1 week of work a month. The ALJ adopts that entire RFC except for that one part. The vocational expert ultimately testified that Mr. Schaff would not be employable if he was limited to that degree. Now, the judge seems to ignore the fact that there was also a note done by Dr. Ingalls at the same time that he filled out the RFC. And he does explain in that note that what the injury is. He explains that he has chronic pain syndrome. He also goes to the degree to even put the medical number in next to the diagnosis. He also
his arm had been amputated. Would that make him disabled as a matter of law? Really?
No. You need two arms, two legs, one arm, one leg. No. If the arm was amputated, he would not be disabled as a matter of law.
Surprising. What kind of jobs can you do with one arm?
Be a judge.
In fact, that came up in the case recently, a security monitor.
Oh, I see. That's the new.
Depends upon what your dexterity is. But the point is that the judge basically says, you know, there's nothing in this record to conclude that Mr. Schaaf will miss 1 week of work per month. And it's in this report. He does raise it, but basically just dismisses it by saying that, you know, this information is insufficient to support Dr. Zingel's statement that Mr. Schaaf would miss so much work.
Not having the arm at all wouldn't be disabling. Why is this worse than not having an arm?
Because it's the pain level, Your Honor. It's the fact he has the nerve yet there, so he has chronic pain with that nerve, and now he has another nerve that's been transplanted onto another branch so as to get some, at least, function to the arm so it doesn't atrophy further. So it's a pain. The sleeping, insomnia that he has with that because he's in bed, and if he's on his stomach or on his back, I mean, that's the whole nuts and bolts of the case. And if there was a doctor that came to the hearing, ALJ could have brought a doctor, and if that doctor testified, you know, I disagree with that, and the judge chose
these
to...
These pain drugs he takes, do they have debilitating effects? Or
not debilitating, but they do contribute to fatigue and to concentration. Oxycodone does.
Dizziness, things like that?
To some degree. But
what is it?
He doesn't have a great deal of dizziness. It's the inability for him to sleep. And
but these are prescription painkillers.
Absolutely.
Are they narcotic?
Yes.
They're not, yeah.
Yes, oxycodone, yes. So, Your Honor, with that, I think that the record is clear here that the judge was just picking parts of the record, saying this part of Dr. Engel's opinion is credible and this part isn't, without having any explanation, any bridging of why that opinion was not credible, other than saying that basically this information is insufficient to support Dr. Engel's opinion.
Okay, thank you.
That's all reserved.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Elizabeth Berry. I'm here on behalf of Michael Astrew, the Commissioner of the Social Security Administration. In February 2005, Mr. Schaaf was in a snowmobile accident and was hurt pretty badly, injuring his left arm and right knee. A month later, he was playing with a bobcat in his yard and hurt himself again. Now, what's not in dispute in this case is what Mr. Schaaf can do with his left arm and his right knee. Mr. Schaaf takes no issue with ALJ's RFC finding, his residual functional capacity finding, as to his left arm. The ALJ found that Mr. Schaaf could carry 20 pounds but not lift with his left arm. That's what Mr. Schaaf said he could do. That's what Dr. Ingalls, Mr. Schaaf's treating doctor, said he could do, and that's what the ALJ found. Mr. Schaaf also takes no issue with the ALJ's RFC finding as to his ability to walk, stand, and sit. The ALJ found that Mr. Schaaf could sit, stand, and walk for 6 hours, and that's consistent with Dr. Ingalls, Mr. Schaaf's treating physician's finding. Mr. Schaaf only takes issue with what is omitted from the RFC here. That is Dr. Ingalls' assertion that during an average month, Mr. Schaaf would miss a week or more of work. Dr. Ingalls made that finding in a checkmark box with no supporting statement. Now, it's important to recognize that the ALJ gave Dr. Ingalls' opinion controlling weight in every aspect except this unsupported statement. But the ALJ, as he's required to do, looked elsewhere in the record to find support for this statement. The ALJ noted that Dr. Ingalls pointed out on page 311 of the record the loss of that loss of mobility and chronic pain have systemic effect with chronic fatigue and insomnia. So, Dr. Ingalls?
I'm concerned about this. This is the third case today in which we have this identical piece of boilerplate about credibility. I mean, it's the identical. I mean, you know, there's maybe one or two words, but all the critical words are the same.
I know. I understand what you're saying. In this case, the ALJ provided detailed explanation as to the credibility finding here. It wasn't just a matter of stating boilerplate language and leaving it at that. Okay. He went on into great detail. The ALJ noted Dr. Ingalls' finding of chronic fatigue and insomnia, but he found that that statement by itself was insufficient to support so much missed work. The ALJ looked at the treating records, and the treating records, the treaters say they're very pleased with Mr. Shave's progress, that he's doing well. His treaters even released him to hunt with a crossbow. In fact, Mr. Shave denied to his treaters that he had memory loss, that he had problems with concentration, that he was that he had problems with confusion, or that he had an inability to cope with day-to-day stressors. As a result of those treating notes, the ALJ found that there was no evidence of side effects that would interfere significantly with the ability to perform the work as found in the RFC. Now, not having an explanation from Dr. Ingalls for the missed work finding, Mr. Shafe appears to supply one. On page 21 of his brief, Mr. Shafe asserts that it's Dr. Ingalls' opinion that oxycodone and other medications cause drowsiness, fatigue, lack of concentration, and only reduce Mr. Shafe's pain temporarily. He makes no cite in support of that statement. Instead, he refers the court to more than 150 pages of the record. I reviewed the record, and I don't believe that there's any statement by Dr. Ingalls as described by Mr. Shafe in his brief. Besides the finding that the medical evidence did not support a finding of disability, the ALJ also found that Mr. Shafe's allegations of disabling pain were not entirely credible. He found that they weren't entirely credible because of Mr. Shafe's daily activities, which included having custody of his young son 5 days a week and caring for him, which included preparing cereal for him, driving him 15 miles to and from the bus stop. He described in statements in support of his application that he went fishing. As I mentioned, he was released to hunt with a crossbow. He also had elective surgery on his knee to run, despite doctors' reports that he was doing very, very well with non-operative management and basically, those were their words, the doctor's words, basically able to return to normal activities. The ALJ also noted Mr. Shafe's non-compliance with physical therapy. He attended one physical therapy session in October 2005. He never returned for the remaining 2 months. The records indicate that he was discharged for non-compliance. And the ALJ asked Mr. Shafe about that at the hearing, and Mr. Shafe replied that he didn't have transportation, but the ALJ found that that statement was inconsistent with his other statements that he drives his son 30 miles a day to his bus stop. The ALJ was also troubled by Mr. Shafe's statement that at the hearing that he experienced that his pain level is a 10 out of 10. The ALJ noted that a 10 out of 10 pain level is the maximum pain level that someone can experience, an excruciating level of pain, and one would expect someone to show some evidence or there'd be some physical evidence that someone was in that kind of pain. And the ALJ noted that there was no such evidence at that hearing. The issue in this case is whether the ALJ's decision here is supported by substantial evidence. Does the ALJ's decision have adequate support? Did the ALJ build an accurate and logical bridge from the evidence to the conclusion that Mr. Shafe is not disabled? If the court has no questions, I respectfully request that the court affirm the commissioner's decision.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Barra. Mr. Semph, how much time does he have? 3 minutes or 4 minutes?
want to note, Your Honor, they're, again, referring to the report that Dr. Ingalls did along with the RFC. He has a nerve transposition surgery with some improvement in function, but still has a permanent disability of very limited function in the left arm. He also suffers from chronic pain and insomnia from the pain. He goes on to state, functional assessment form is filled out after discussion with Sean. He is very limited in function in the left arm only. Other than the left arm loss of function, he has normal function. The loss of mobility and chronic pain does have a systemic effect with chronic fatigue and insomnia. And then on the same document that's attached, he indicates that he's going to miss a week of work a month. That's the basis for that. Mm-hmm. And to find, just because find that the doctor is incredible, is what is the focus of this case. And there is no other doctor.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Semp and Ms. Barry. And our last case for argument, United States.